Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Nice to see you as ever.
Nice to see you. Good morning.
How are you doing this smoky summer?
Well, I'd rather be out in the smoke, but you can't win them all.
Yeah. How was it when you came in? How was the air quality?
Today's much better. The other day, I enjoyed looking up the weather on my iPhone to get, rather than sunnier clouds, a forecast of smoke.
Yeah.
So that's gone happily.
Who would have thought? Well, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there certainly is fire engulfing the Bill Cosby story. We're going to talk about that right now. Bill Cosby, of course, admitting drugging at least one woman. How did this all come to light? How do we find out after all of the denials?
Well, that's fascinating. What has come out now, that admission that he had purchased drugs to give to women that he wished to have sex with, came out of what's called an examination for discovery in a civil lawsuit where one of these women sued him. And when you sue somebody in a civil case, unlike in a criminal case where you've got the right to remain silent, if you're charged with a crime, you don't need to, in Canada or the U.S., explain yourself. You can just sit there and see if the prosecution can prove its case. But in a civil case, if you're being sued for money, you have an obligation to show up at one of these examinations for discovery and answer questions that the other side's lawyer is asking you. And if you don't do that, you'll be found in contempt and go to jail. So you must do it. And the starting point is that things that a person says in an examination for discovery would ordinarily only be used in that case. The idea is that if you're forcing somebody to testify as part of the civil case, the other side wouldn't be able to ordinarily just, you know, send a copy of what you've said to the press, or the Crown couldn't use it to prosecute you for something. And in this case, after he had testified about the buying of these drugs to give to at least this person, the case settled. He apparently agreed to pay the person some money, and the other side agreed to accept the settlement.
But we didn't know what he'd said.
That was apparently part of the agreement, which isn't terribly uncommon. If you have a person suing you, the person defending it might say, well, look, you know, I don't admit that I've done something wrong, but, you know, civil litigation is uncertain. You're suing me for $1 million. If I pay you $500,000 and you agree not to tell anyone and I'm not admitting that I've done anything, they've just reached a private settlement of the case.
But doesn't it kind of indicate that there's something amiss?
It can, and certainly here, the actual admission, and in this case, the apparently the judge gave an order that permitted this to be released. So that's how it came
Bill
out.
Bill Cosby's testimony in the civil case.
That's right. But the settlement of a case, I mean, leaving aside that this seems like an admission of at least doing something that seems extremely problematic, not every time a case settles does it necessarily mean the person being sued did the thing, right? You could have somebody who's sued for negligently crashing their car into your car. And the person might say, look, I don't think I'm responsible for it.
But I want you off my back?
But I want you off my back. Look, if I give you $10,000, will you drop this? And I won't have to go to court anymore and pay my lawyer and have the uncertainty of a court case. And the other side might say, fine, we'll accept that. So not every time that there's a settlement does it necessarily mean that the defendant did the thing. Sometimes things are settled because a person doesn't wish to incur the cost of further litigation. And litigation is always uncertain. You never know what a judge or jury is going to do.
So at that point, we weren't sure if Bill Cosby had admitted to anything. Why, in that situation, in the civil case, could he have lied? Could he have denied it? Or was there enough evidence that said, you know, we've got you?
Well, when a case like that settles, there's been no determination that the person did the thing. And we don't know the terms of the settlement. He might have paid the other side, you know, $5,000 and said, look, I deny it, but this is a waste of my time. If you'll take the $5,000 and drop the case, we'll be at an end.
Right.
So sometimes things settle for small amounts of money, and it may not mean that the person did the thing. A case can settle for a variety of reasons and with no agreement between the two sides about what actually happened.
Okay, but in this particular case then, I think it was the Associated Press that probed a little further to find out what he had stated in this case.
Yes, and what he said appears to be pretty damning in terms of, you know, what in fact he was up to. We don't know how much money he paid this person in the civil claim to settle it, but certainly his admissions seem particularly damning given his repeated denials.
So he admitted drugging at least one woman.
That's correct. So that now has some very interesting implications in the U.S. And in the United States, the criminal law differs state to state. Each one has a different criminal law. And it would appear that in the place where most of these allegations occurred, there is a limitation period on how long the state can wait to charge somebody with a criminal offense. And it would appear that the limitation periods have expired.
So the other women that made claims against him, that could be null and void because the statute of limitation means, sorry, too late?
That's right. The state can't just charge somebody in most of the United States for sexual assault. There's a time period within which the prosecution must start their case. And the reason for that is a concern that if too much time goes by, a person may have a hard time defending themselves. Their witnesses might have passed away or memories would have faded. They can't prove their alibi, whatever it might be. In Canada, however, we don't have a limitation period where the Crown proceeds by indictment, so the more serious way they can charge somebody. So in Canada, there is no time limit on charging somebody with sexual assault. That could occur at any time. Also, in most of the U.S. states, there is a limitation period on how long you have to sue somebody for money, civilly. And in virtually all of the cases in the U.S., that has also expired. Now, in British Columbia, we have an exception for a number of things, including sexual assault, where there in British Columbia, there is no time limit. So if a person is suing somebody else for sexual assault, they wouldn't be barred from doing that as a result of time going by.
Well, we see in the Gian Gomeshi case, still allegations and no guilt's been found, but I mean, the same token, is that, you know, historic cases can come forward here because our laws are different.
That's right. There sounds like there is a creative attempt being made by one of the women accusing him of this behavior to sue him for defamation on the theory that his denial was defamatory when he actually did it.
Right.
Saying publicly that she's lying.
Is that Gloria Allred?
I can't recall the name, but anyway, that's a creative approach. Maybe that will get some traction. But that comes from the fact that there's a limitation period there, which is just a public policy decision. Sort of what's more important, trying to require these sort of claims to come early so that people's memories don't fade and evidence isn't lost, or, and part of the policy consideration here is that sometimes, particularly with things like sexual abuse, the victims of that sort of abuse can be, as a result of it, not in a position to sort of promptly go and hire a lawyer and sue for it. Sometimes they're people who are young, are victimized by the person perpetrating the assaults. And the idea here is that, look, we recognizing those things, we don't want to have these claims cut off as a result of delay.
Interesting. We're with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson here on Legally Speaking. We're talking about Bill Cosby's admission that he drugged at least one woman and how that's playing out in the U.S. and how our laws fare here in Canada. Stay with us. We're back with him right after this.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. If it's the Callwood Crawl or a mess on the Malahat, we've got your back with more traffic more often. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
This summer, help a stranger. Help them stall their car. Lock their keys inside, then look up as a torrential downpour starts to fall and feel great about it. This summer, donate blood and help give someone a chance to live through more life stories.
Even one donation can save a life. Visit blood.ca to book an appointment today. Canadian Blood Services. It's in you to give.
There is a special need for O and A negative blood. Book now at blood.ca. Hi, Marianne. I'm from Coit. We're looking for dirty air ducts.
This absolutely has to be cleaned. Me and my daughter have really bad allergies.
Get a head start on your air duct cleaning. Call now before your furnace starts up for 50% off from Coit.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe that there was that much dust and dirt in my air ducts.
Save 50% off air duct cleaning now. Show us your dirt. Call 1-800-4COIT. That's F-O-R-C-O-I-T.
I'm here with a few fans of Bluebird cabs. So why do you like Bluebird cabs?
I can get one on my schedule. No waiting around.
It's classy, unlike the bus.
I like the privacy. I can read, make a phone call.
You can pile the whole family in. I like that.
I just like being driven around. It makes me feel cool.
You are cool.
Thanks, Mom.
And thank you for your answers. When you need a cab, think Bluebird cabs. They'll get you where you want to go. Fast, reliable, comfortable.
Come on.
BCA roadside emergency. We are currently experiencing higher than normal call volumes. Please.
BCAA has locked out its emergency roadside assistance dispatchers for trying to negotiate fair pay. You may have to wait. If your car breaks down this summer, call BCAA at 1-877-325-8888 and tell them to end the lockout. Brought to you by COPE 378.
If you or your company are struggling with debt, Abacan & Associates Debt Relief Program can help.
I owned a hardwood floor company. The economy started to drop a bit. Business went down, taxes went up. I went to Abacan, I met with Kyle. He gave me my options and we figured out which was best for me. People and staff there at Abacan are wonderful. They do really, really make it easy for you.
Call 250-995-3122. That's 250-995-3122.
What's the talk around your water cooler? Don't have one? Then it's time you called Old Victoria Water Company and get into the convenience and great taste of pure water delivered to your office or home. Old Victoria Water is the only company offering three choices of water: purified, natural spring, and distilled. Get the cooler conversation started with a free 3-week trial. Just call 744-2333 or click on oldvictoriawater.com. For fast and friendly service, Old Victoria Water Company, the island's water cooler people for over 20 years.
Shining the spotlight on Victoria's finest talent, Eye on the Arts with Adam Sawatsky. Sundays at noon on CFAX 1070. The biggest news events, the stories in our community, understood. It's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. We are talking about the fact that Bill Cosby has admitted drugging at least one woman, how that's playing out in courts in the U.S., and how it wouldn't happen necessarily here because our system is different. Could you remind us, Michael, about sort of the lateral thinking of the lawyer from, I think, at least one of the of his alleged victims that... you spoke of earlier, but I think this is pretty fascinating how they may well still be able to get after him.
Well, civilly, the concept was to sue him for defamation on the theory that his claims that one of the alleged victims here was lying when she said that this happened to her. Apparently that was a statement made through Cosby's spokesperson. The theory is that that comment would be defamatory, so the defamation would have been inside the limitation period because it occurred only more recently. So that's a creative approach to it. The other challenge that would come with either a civil claim or a criminal charge here is with respect to what use that previous statement could be, what it could be used for.
The one that when Cosby actually admitted to drugging a woman.
That's right. Now, the most U.S. states would have a rule which is similar to the Canadian approach to these sort of what are called compelled statements. In a criminal case, generally a person can remain silent. You're not obliged, if you're charged with a crime, to get up and start explaining yourself. But that's not the case in a civil context. If you're sued, you must show up at an examination for discovery and answer questions, because we're just fighting over money and we're trying to get to the truth. There's no value of preventing the person from testifying there. Now, in Canada, there was an interesting Supreme Court of Canada case a couple of years ago dealing with what does this protection against self-incrimination mean where a person shows up at an examination for discovery, and in this case, the person showed up at the examination for discovery and said it was a claim for impaired driving causing bodily harm. And the person showed up at the examination for discovery and said, I have no memory of what happened. I can't remember anything. And then after that was done, he was charged criminally. And he showed up at his criminal trial and testified and said, oh yes, I remember everything and I'm innocent. So the issue was, can you use that previous statement at the examination for discovery, the I don't remember anything, at the criminal trial? And the Supreme Court of Canada ultimately found, yes, you can.
You can reach back into the civic trial and use that testimony.
But only for a very limited purpose. And the limited purpose being to go to whether the person is telling the truth on the theory that you said A now, you said B before,
We
shouldn't believe A. It couldn't be used to prove that you committed the offense.
But it does speak to your character and your ability to lie.
Well, it shouldn't be used to prove bad character, but it could be used to prove you're incredible. We shouldn't believe you. So the Crown there, or the prosecutor there, if he was charged criminally, if barring the limitation issue, the separate issue would be, you may be able to use this to prove that he's not telling the truth if he chose to testify and say, I didn't do this. But you may not be able to use it to prove that he did it. It's just a slightly different thing. And if you, in a criminal case here, if an accused person, let's say they testified at an examination for discovery and admitted to doing the thing, they said, yes, I was drunk and I crashed my motorcycle and I injured the person. I'm responsible for that. The Crown couldn't then charge the person and just use that admission to prove that they did it. If there wasn't any other evidence to prove they did it, The person's admission that they did it when they were forced to testify and explain themselves couldn't then be used later to prove they did it criminally.
Why, I mean, and this is just conjecture, but why would Bill Cosby not say, I don't remember?
Well, that's a good question. Perhaps he was inclined to tell the truth. I mean, there are implications for lying. If you lie under oath, you could be charged with perjury and go to prison for that, and that would certainly be within the limitation period. So perjuring yourself would be an unwise choice. And that's the other thing which is important to remember. When we make these decisions, policy decisions, saying, for example, you won't be able to use the examination for discovery answers in other proceedings, or generally release them to the public if the case settles, there's a balancing there. One of the disadvantages is that you may get people like Mr. Cosby not being convicted of things based on their answers at the forced examination for discovery. But on the other hand, you may get more truthful answers in that context. You may have a person who says, look, you know, I'm required to testify here by law.
Because he doesn't think it's going to go anywhere.
And I think this is going to be private, so I'll tell the truth and admit to doing it. And so that's a weighing we have to engage in when we decide what to do. And there's a sort of the constitutional principle is we shouldn't force people to testify and then use their admissions against them later.
Paul's got a comment here. He admitted to drugging, implied no consent or knowledge on her part, or getting or giving drugs to a woman. Consent, not much different than me buying a drink or weed for a woman. I'm not sure anywhere I've read he drugged a woman.
Yeah, I think the language that was used was he agreed in the examination for discovery that he purchased drugs for the purpose of giving them to women he wished to have sexual activity with.
So I've been overstating it by saying he admitted drugging.
I think it was maybe a little bit narrower, but it certainly leaves the impression that you've got somebody here buying sedatives and giving the sedatives to women that he's then having engaged in sexual activity with. It sure sounds like a disturbing admission.
So to be sure then, in this civil trial, Bill Cosby would have been aware that when he admitted obtaining quaaludes to give to young women he was pursuing for sex, he would be sure and advised by his lawyer that go ahead because this can't be revealed under U.S. law or state law. It can't be revealed.
Well, it couldn't be used against him in a criminal case, and it would be particularly where there's a settlement, then it wouldn't be made public. I mean, if the case continued to court, civil cases like other cases are in public. People could go and watch it. But where it settles, that never occurs.
Let's bring Stephen in. Hi, Stephen. You're on CFAX.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity. The thing that bothers me, this indicates a much greater problem. we hear the words interpretation and opinion. Now, we also hear that we are all equal before the law, which we all know is completely rubbish, depends how much money you got. But what I don't understand is either he did it or he didn't. Now, you go to one court and they say one thing, but you can't use that in another court. Doesn't mean to say when there's a diagnosis of medicine, if it's given in one hospital, it's different to being given in another hospital. I mean, is this the law? Is it just an expensive game? It bothers me. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Michael?
Well, in different kinds of proceedings, there are different tests. For example, we'll all remember O.J. Simpson. And at the end of the day, in that case, criminally, the jury had a doubt about whether he did it. And that's the standard in a criminal case, is proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
The glove don't fit, you must acquit.
That's right, he was acquitted. But then he was sued civilly. And when you sue somebody civilly for money, the test isn't proof beyond a reasonable doubt, it's just probably. So they concluded in that case he probably did it, even if there was a doubt about it.
Oh, wow. Hi, Barbara, you're on CFAX. What do you think?
Oh, thank you. Isn't it difficult to almost impossible to convict when S&M has been agreed to? In the case of CBC.
Oh, the Giangameshi case.
For example.
Well, I think that might still be in question as to whether it was consensual. Michael, you want to weigh in on that one?
Well, at least in Canada, you if you drug somebody and they're unconscious and you then have sexual intercourse with them or engage in sexual activity, there is no consent. Consent requires an express indication of agreement to the activity. It's not enough if the person doesn't protest, or certainly not enough if the person doesn't protest because they're incapacitated as a result of drugs you gave them. If you engage in that sort of activity, which is what's alleged here,
and
in
the Giangameshi case, part of the, I believe the defense is, and I'm not an expert, is that I don't know if it's defense, but his own defense saying that this was consensual, and as Barbara's saying, well, how does that work if they agree? But that's going to be, I guess, what will be in question in that case.
Yeah, that will be a factual determination. If in that case, I think the women in that case deny that they consented to the activity, but if the judge or jury had a reasonable accepted or has a reasonable doubt about whether they consented and they weren't incapacitated by drugs, as is alleged in the Bill Cosby case, that would amount to a defense to that.
Okay, so what we have so far is that we know that Bill Cosby has admitted to obtaining Quaaludes to give to young women he was pursuing for sex. Do you think that this is going to get more traction in the States, or has it legally run its course?
Well, apparently the limitation issue at least is uncertain in California criminally. I think it may cause some re-examination there about whether their current policy, which has, in most states, a limitation period on sexual assault charges, is an appropriate thing to have. So I would think at least on that level, that's going to get re-examined.
Interesting, and we wouldn't be going through that here in Canada because our laws are different.
That's right. There's no time limit here.
Great insight. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Michael Mulligan with Mulligan Tam.